We're on Daf Mem Amud Beis, and we were analyzing the machlokes between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim as to whether or not a ketana gets knas. And Rabbi Meir was the one who assumed that there's an exclusion in the parasha of knas, an exclusion of ketana. Where did he see this exclusion? Because the Torah says v'lo siel isha, and that's referring to a nara. Why is it referring to a nara? Because b'mahava atzma hakosuv medaber, that the pasuk is talking about a woman who has the ability to be mekadesh herself, and that's only a nara, not a ketan. The rabbanon say that the pasuk says nara without a hay, and the word nara without a hay indicates that she's a ketana. So we're up to the word shama rapapa. Let's see if we can find it. It's towards the bottom of the page. I guess you'd count up about 10 lines.
I found it.
You'll see it. Rapapa is the first two words in the line. Now what we're about to see is that this drasha of Reish Lakish to explain the Rabbanon is not really, as we say in Yiddish, oiskehalten. It's not really reliable. It can't be that the word nara, when written without a hey, is referring to a ketana, because we're going to prove that all over the Torah, except for one place, the Torah always writes nara without a hey, and it's very often referring to a nara, not a ketana. That's what we're going to try to prove. So we're going to have to refurbish, so to speak, Reish Lakish's drasha. Shama'a Rav Papa Breder Rav Chanan Mibek Klochis. When Rav Papa, who's the son of Rav Chanan, who came from a place called Klochis, when he heard Reish Lakish, that whenever it says Nara without a hay, the implication is a ketana, Azal, Rav Papa, went Omra, and he said it over Kamei Drav Simi Drav Shimi Bar Ashi Omrali. And when Rav Shimi Bar Ashi heard this drasha, the premise, the underlying premise of this drasha, that the nara without a hay means ketana, Eitun Aham Masnisalu, first he sent him the following: Eitun, you, in plural, Aha, on this Mishnah, meaning on this discussion that we've had here about whether or not a ketana receives knas, Masnisel, who you had the tradition of Reish Lakish, as if to say, Reish Lakish's comment, namely, we darshan the word nara without a hay as a ketana, was appended to this discussion about the Rabbanon regarding knas, namely that a ketana collects knas. However, Anan, we, he's using the royal we, aha masnisan law, masnisan law. We heard the drush of Reish Lakish, but in a totally different context, with regard to a different subject matter, not the subject matter of knas, but rather the subject of motzi shemra. Om Reish Lakish, ha motzi shemra al haktana potter. Now Reish Lakish is about to darshan and probably the only time in the Torah, as far as I know, where the Torah used the word nara with a hay, to exclude a ketana from motzi shemra. Now the underlying premise of this drush of Reish Lakish is that motzi shemra should apply to even a ketana, except for this miut. So if not for this miut, to exclude ketana from motzi shemra, we would have logically included ketana in motzi shemra. The Gemara is about to disprove that assumption, that premise. There was never a possibility at all that the parasha motzi shemra included a ketana, because the parasha motzi shemra includes not only a description of what you pay in a case where you slandered the nara, but if in fact the witnesses are reliable, then we put the woman to death. And that's also written in the same parasha motzi shemra, as we'll see momentarily, and that certainly refers to a nara, not a ketana. because a katana is a lav bas onsh. But in any event, before we get to the upshlug, let's just understand what Reish Lakish is saying. He's looking at the pasuk Yemotzi Shemra, and that pasuk is in the context of a knas for slandering his wife, meaning he claims, which is a fabrication of truth, that he has witnesses to testify and establish that she had this nus, and in fact the witnesses are false witnesses. And in the parasha, Ne'amar, it says, with regard to the punishment of penalty that we impose upon the Motzi Shemra, it says, V'yanshu oso me'akese, v'nasnu la'vi'anara. And this, in this particular case, the Torah uses the word na'ara and spells it out with the hey. And that's telling us, na'ara mole dibra kasuv, a full-fledged na'ara, which means she's after the age of 12, as opposed to the exclusion of a katana. So in a case where a man marries a ketana, and again, keep in mind, Rav Moshe, a lot of people don't realize this. I mean, we know it, but I'm just emphasizing it, that the kedushe ketana or kedushe Torah, when a father marries off his daughter as a ketana, that's kedushe doraisa. And if he was motzi shemra, if, let's say, after he consummated the marriage, he claims that she must have had a different kind of relationship beforehand, that he brings Eidim to testify, if we are able to falsify the Eidim, meaning establish that they're false, you might think that he pays Knas, the Mea Kesef, and therefore the Torah adds the hay to the word Nara, where it usually leaves out the hay, to teach you, no, that there's no din of Motzi Shemra to pay a Knas for slandering a Ketana. And what Rav Shimi Barash is pointing out here is that Rav Reish Lakish never made this comment and this drasha to include a ketana. What he meant to say was that whenever the Torah uses the word nara with a hay, it comes to exclude a ketana.
It doesn't amount to the same thing.
Give me just another 5 minutes, okay, and we'll get back to your point. It's a very good point. So Maskev Le'Rav Adabarava, he objects to this whole drusha the way it was presented by Rav Shimi Barashi, because the underlying premise is that there would be Motzi Shema, there could be Motzi Shema in the case of a Ketana. Time of the Kosev Rachmana Nara, with the reason why you exclude a Ketana is simply because the extra hay. If not for the extra hay, hava mina filu ketana, are you telling me that there would be a hava mina to say that this parasha with the knas of Mea Kesef would apply to a ketana? Impossible. Vaksiv, the essence, the kishkis of this parasha, motzi shemra, is v'im emes haya dover hazeh. Right, there are two sides of the coin. One side is that we disprove the eidim, and the other side is that the eidim are a reliable Eidim. You know, we interrogated the Eidim, and they withstood all our onslaughts. They gave the right answers to all our questions, and we rely on these Eidim. That's called the Emes HaYadav Hazeh. And therefore, what does the Torah say? It says, "Votziu es hanara al Pesach beis aviu skalua, that she'll be chayav skila for adultery." That could not possibly be referring to a ketana. V'ketana labas ochimi, right, until she reaches the age of maturity, which is at the age of 12, she's not subject to any punishments whatsoever, period. So even though in the case of a ketana, he could be married to her, and then he could come into Beis Din and say that he found her to be a bu'ula, you know, Pesach Pasuach, and he brings Eidim in the whole 9 yards, still it's impossible to apply the parasha of Motzi Shemra in that case, because the parasha of Motzi Shemra has two parts to it, as a part of Tashlum Knas, in event that we find out that the Baal Shiker, in other words, he told the whole fabrication, and it has another part to it, that if the Eidim that were brought into Beis Din by the Baal are reliable Eidim, then she's put to death. That could not possibly be referring to a ketana, because a ketana is a lav bar onshim. but rather now at this point the Gemara has to refurbish Reish Lakish, and he says, and the Gemara says the following: Reish Lakish is not coming to bring a proof that Motzi Shemra only applies to a Nara and to the exclusion of a Katana. Ella, just the contrary. What he's proving is that Khan, in the case of Motzi Shemra, the Torah went out of its way to write the word Nara Mole. And if you take a look at Rashi later on in Masech Tuksubis, he's going to point out that the only time that the Torah writes Nara Mole is here in this context of Motzi Shemra. And it's coming to teach us that Habakol Makum Shenemar Nara Filu Ketana B'mashma. Meaning, since the parasha Motzi Shemra is clearly referring to a Nara, that we know, and it's impossible to have a Habamina that we're talking about a Ketana, because you can't read the words of the Torah here and interpret it as referring to a Ketana. So then, Reish Lakish comes along and he says, so why did the Torah in this particular case have to go out of its way to add the hay, which it never did? And that would seem to mean that it's coming to exclude a Ketana. We know that this parasha is not referring to a Ketana. But rather, what the Torah wanted to use this case, since in this case it's obvious that we're talking about a Nara, to teach you that whenever the word Nara is written without a hay, then it means to include even a Ketana. And that's going to be the basis for the Chachamim Shita that we're dealing with in the context of our Mishnah, that a Ketana receives Knas. So again, what the Torah was doing is, it was looking for one occasion in which clearly you absolutely knew that the Parsha is referring to a Nara. And the Torah, in that particular case, where it's obvious that the parasha is referring to a Ketana, to add a hey, I'm sorry, that it's obvious that the parasha is referring to a Nara, to add the letter hey at the end of the word Nara, to teach us that why is the hey added? Because the parasha is referring to a Nara. We don't need that. I mean, we know the parasha is referring to a Nara. It says, Votziu Sanar Pesach, right, El Pesach Beis of Yoskalua. So, why would the Torah do something that was unnecessary, add a superfluous hey, to teach me that we're talking about a Nara, not a Ketana, when it's obvious? The answer is the Torah wants to give us a system that will reveal elsewhere in the Torah, not in this particular parasha, not in this context, but elsewhere in a different context, that if the hey is missing, then it refers to a Ketana as well. Meaning, here, it's referring to a Nara. And why is it referring to a Nara? Because of the extra hay. Again, we don't need the extra hay to tell me that we're talking about a Nara to the exclusion of a Ketana. But we're going to teach you that here, that it is a Nara. The Torah went out of its way to add the hay in order lafuki to tell you that elsewhere, where it says Nara without a hay, it's coming to include even a Ketana. So the Torah is basically writing out the following. It's like a secret code. The Torah is telling you, I'm going to reveal to you that whenever it says Nara with a hay, it means a Nara. In the context where the Torah wrote the Nara with a hay, we don't need that. I don't need that. But the Torah is giving me a rule of thumb that kaviyachal, if there would ever be a parasha in the Torah where the hay is written, then you know it's a Nara to the exclusion of a Ketana. But there is no such parasha. So why do you bother telling me that rule? The answer is, the substance of that rule is, that where it leaves out the hay, it's referring and including even a Ketana.
Now, this is a Chachamim, right?
Correct.
Which means this is probably the Halakha.
I assume so. I didn't open up the Ibn Ezra. Yeah, we'd have to look it up. You know what? You could, you know, without looking up the Ibn Ezra, you could look in the Ein Mishpat, and let's just see if there's a Tzion here.
Not
well, look,
the
it's interesting. In the Mishnah, there's no Tzion, because this Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Meir. The Chachamim Omrim, etc. But I don't see a Tzion even on the Chachamim here.
And the reason I'm asking this is my impression of the whole
quotation here from the Rambam, Motzi Shemra al-Ketana, So the Rambam writes, "Motzei shem ra lakdan apotur min haknas min hamalkos." Shemara mole.
Shemara.
Shemara mole.
That's a, yeah, but I'm not talking about motzei shem ra now.
Yeah, but he's talking about knas. He mentions knas. Yes. Right? Read the Rambam once more. This is interesting.
Motzei shem ra lakdan apotur min haknas.
I thought he meant onus of a fatah.
You're
talking about
onus of a fatah. And my impression with the whole, through the whole, maybe I'm misremembering, the whole perek is that we're only talking about an ara.
Well, that's
a six-word drash.
That's not so. Let's go back. Well, I don't have it here because I got the wrong volume. But if you go back to the beginning of the perek, you'll see that Gemara says Hamani Rabbi Meir on the first daf of the perek.
I read you a different Rambam about Motzei Shem Ra. How about Ketana Yishna Knas? That's also a Rambam. Ketana B'mas Shlo Shon Rav Yom Echad Av Shu Yesh Bo Mecher Yesh Bo Gam Knas Nensa Mespatuta.
Oh, so that's like the Chacham.
Kidvi Chacham.
So wait, what you just read me is the language of the Rambam? Which part? Because
the part I just
because obviously
first I read you.
It doesn't say Kedivrei Chacham in the Rambam. That's for sure, right?
No.
So what part is the quote? Read the quote of the Rambam itself.
Here I'm just talking about Tana Yesh Taknas.
Yeah.
The last words are Kedivrei Chacham.
Right, but that's
I'm not sure that's in the Rambam.
Right, that's you won't find it in the Rambam. Yes. That I can promise you. Yes.
Doesn't ring right.
So you see this Gemara over here, Hamani Rabbi Meir, right?
Yeah.
Actually, and it's also says Rambam, also Shunuch or Tuchan Oroch.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. Interesting, we had what I call the six-word drash on the second Amud. Nara, Hanara, Betula.
Right, that's going on. Choftes of the Beis.
It's here, I think, actually, yeah. But... yeah, after the Mubet. There, one of the Naras is Lugufe, which indicates to me Nara means Nara, according to that drash. But I guess that's not necessarily halacha.
But I think Lugufe means to just formulate the parasha, meaning it's not an extra word, it's to be understood in its context.
Ah, but even according to that drash, maybe it also includes Ketana, when it says Lugufe.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
And I would even be inclined to assume that it includes Ketana, based on our sugya that whenever it says Nara without a hey, it's coming to include a Ketana. That seems to be the bottom line of the sugya, according to Reish Lakish. Now, I have a note here, and he says the following: the Gemara lo mevur l'das Rabbi Meir, according to Rabbi Meir, Madua b'chola Torah k'siv nara choser levad mipam yechida v'parashas motzi shemra. In other words, according to Rabbi Meir, even when the hay is omitted, for example in Onus u'mefata, we're still going to insist that's referring to a nara to the exclusion of a ketana. So why then does the Torah on one occasion add the hay? You know, especially according to the Chachamim of Meir, the Torah went out of its way to add hay in a case where it's obvious that we're in Nara, to tell you that elsewhere, when it says Nara without a hay, it's referring to it includes even a katana. But according to Rabbi Meir, the word Nara without a hay it excludes a katana, and it's a Nara and not a katana. So that per se is fine. You know, the fact that the Torah left out the hay, that's okay, but in one occasion the Torah added the hay. So why did the Torah have to add the hay in the parasha of Motzi Shem? So that's the question that was asked by the Chizkuni of all people. He's one of the Chachmei Ashkenaz, and in his commentary on the parasha of Motzi Shemra,
his commentary on Chumash.
On the parasha in Chumash. So he addresses this question: what's the extra hay according to Rabbi Meir? Correct? Let's just see the pasuk inside. I have it here in the Torah R.
I've got it here also if you want to see the context.
Okay, just one second. Yeah. That's that. And where? Yes. Okay, I just want to make sure we're in the right place here. He says the following. Vinasnu lavi hanara, says the Chizkuni, kulam chasei rechutz mizeh.
Even in the same parsha, by the way. I'm looking at it now.
Oh, twice it says with a?
No, what I'm saying is, I've already seen it in this whole paragraph. I've already seen it twice written without the final
hey. Right. There's only one time in the Torah she says that the word Nara is written with a hey.
Hmm.
And the Chizkuni makes a comment. He says, ki oz hi shlema ki motzeis shalom. Wow, interesting. Very creative idea in the Chizkuni. That the extra hey indicates shleimut, meaning that she was a besula, not the way he slandered her. Vizel pi aloshen akosuv shir ashirim, oz hayisi beinov kimotzeis shalom. And the Gemara darshins in Pesachim, kekala shenimtze shlema bebeis chameha. Uredufa lelech lahagid shvacha bebeis avir. Right, there's some very very flowery poetic language here, but the upshot is that when a woman is found to be a basula, meaning that she went through this 12-month period and she was loyal to her husband, then that's called kimotze shalom. It's like shalom is miloshin shlemus. And the Chizkuni claims that the extra hay here is indicative of the fact that she's a shlema. So that's what it means, v'yoncho. It says v'yoncho oso mea kesev v'nosnola v'hanara. With a hey, why are we penalizing him and he has to pay this heavy penalty? And the answer is because she's a naro with a hey, meaning that his whole claim was slander, and she's really shlemus. So it means the following, that the extra hey is not a halachic extra hey, the way the Chachamim see it, to teach you that we're excluding a ketana. And whenever there's no hay, we include a katana, and then that's a halachic statement. But rather, the hay is kipshuto shel mikra, so to speak. It's enhancing our understanding of the parasha.
Yeah. Interesting. The next paragraph is when she's found guilty, and there again it's written chaser.
Right.
Hmm.
That's the Chizkuni's point. All right, now we're up to Daf Mem Aleph Amen Aleph, the last Daf in the Perek, and we're up to the Mishnah. This Mishnah is really, it takes us way beyond the subject of what we call Ones Umefata, but it's connected to Ones Umefata, and it defines another difference between Knas and Boshes Upagah. So this is really a Hemshech of the previous Mishnah, which established the various differences between the payment of Knas and the payment of Boshes and Kedak and Boshes and Pagam. And this has to do with the principle called Modeh B'Knas Potur, which means that whenever you have a Knas, if we have no objective evidence except for your own confession, and you confess the crime and therefore you chayv Knas, then you Potur. We don't impose a knas on someone whose admission is the only source of evidence against him. It's only self-incrimination. So there's no self-incrimination to incur a chiv knas. But Boshes Upagah, as you recall, is not a knas. So therefore, Omer Pititi es Bito Shel Ploni, a man comes and he confesses that he had this relationship, she consented, but he admits he had the relationship with this Nara, and there are no witnesses whatsoever. All we have to go by is his own confession. So in such a case, Mishalim Boshes Upagah Al Piatz will be a Mishalim Knas. he will not pay the knas because of the principle mode of the knas patur, which is a sugya in Masechta Bava Kama, and they derive it from the fact that in the parasha of Kefel, of a ganav, it says Asher Yashin Elohim, and then it says Yishalim Shnayim Ve'eyu. Yashin Elohim means we have objective evidence against him to the effect that he stole something, and therefore he has to pay double. And the implication is that only in a case where Beis Din was able to establish his rishus and with evidence, with witnesses, they were able to be marshia to establish his that he was guilty of this crime of stealing, then he pays shnayim, he pays the knas. But if he's marshias atzmo, which means he's moda, and we have no independent evidence to establish in Beis Din that he was a ganav, then he doesn't pay knas. That's called moda v'knas potter. That's a Gemara in Bava Kama. Now, Boshes Supagam Mishalim al piyatz. Boshes Supagam, as one of the as an expression of Tashlumi Chavola, that's not called a knas. Now let's ask the following simple question. This is a child's question. Why is it that Boshes Supagam is not called a knas, and 50 shkolim is called a knas? So this is also a sugya Bava Kama, and Rashi specifically, that's on Daf Hey in Bava Kama. And the Gemara establishes that anyone who pays more than what he damages, or alternatively, he pays a set fee, that's called a Dover Katsuv, that's called Knas. Boshes Supagam doesn't fit into either of these two categories. It's not Yoser Mimashe Hizik, because we're actually trying to calculate what the value of the Hezek was. And number two, it's not a Dover Katsuv. It's going to change from one woman to the other. In fact, if you recall, that was part of the logical reason to assume that the knas of Chamishim Shekel in the case of Boshes Supagam, in the case of Onus Sefata, does not replace Boshes Supagam, because Boshes Supagam could not be a set amount. It's always going to change depending upon whether she's a Bas Malka, whether she's a Bas Ediotos, whether it's Hakol Lufiyam Vayesh or Amis Vayesh. So Pagam is Nezek, and Boshes is another kind of a Nezek. Pagam means let's evaluate how much she decreased on the market if she was sold as a shifra. And Boshes means that relative to the Mavayish and the Mispayish, how much you have to pay. These are all relative payments. All compensation is relative. It depends on how much you owe a person and how much you have to compensate them. So if you borrowed 1,000, you have to pay back 1,000. That's not a knas.
But it's equivalent to Nezek.
Pagam equals Nezek, right? But in the case of Chamishim, that's a knas, meaning that's katsuv, that's set, and it's universal, uniform, for any case of onus of a fata. That's called a knas. And the Mishnah establishes that we have a difference between a knas and mamon in a case of hodas bal din, where there's no independent evidence, it's just his confession. And at this point, we're going to leave the confines of onus u'mafatu. And now the Mishnah is going to study the laws of knas. So, for example, Omer Ganavti, we have no independent evidence to establish that he, Reuven, stole Shimon's cow. If we had evidence, then he would have to pay not only, you know, the value of Shimon's cow if it's not available, if it's available to return it, but he also has to add another 100%. That's kefel. But here we have no evidence. All we have is Omer Ganavti. He admits in front of witnesses that he was the criminal. Is in such a case Mishalim v'sakeren al piyatzma v'yena Mishalim tashlumi kefel v'tashlumi arba v'chamisha. Here we see a clear-cut difference in one payment. Until now we're talking about Knas and Boshes Pagam as two different payments, but now we're talking about Kefil, and we're breaking down Kefil into its two component parts. Half of that Kefil is Mamon, and the other half is Knas. Which half is Mamon? That's what we call Karen, the principle itself. And that, under all circumstances, he would have to pay by virtue of his own confession. That's called Odas Baldin Kemea Edim Dami. So he admits that he stole, he's got to return the object that he stole. But that's only as far as the object or its value, keren. Because we have a principle called Hodas Bal Din. But in the case of Kefel, and certainly in the case of Arba V'Chamisha, in Tvach HaMacharo, that is a knas. That's something that's way beyond the amount of loss that he caused the nignav, and in such a case of a knas, mode of a knas potter. So in his confession, is his confession meaningful or is it not meaningful? Is he chayav based on his confession or is he potter? And what's the answer? Both are true.
Right.
And both are true. One statement is accepted and not accepted.
Yes.
Do you follow what I mean?
Yes.
In other words, we can't rely on his confession to make him pay a knas. Does that mean he's lying through his teeth and we don't believe him? I don't think so. Because if he was lying, why does he pay the keren? There's no edus that could force him to pay the keren. If his edus is completely invalid and we don't rely on his statement, throw it out of court, then why is he paying keren? And Dini Momentus, you can't force a person to pay unless you have proof against him. Apparently the evidence is here by his own confession. So we accept his confession, but he's potter from knas. So I would say he's not potter from knas because we think he's a no good liar. Why would a person lie and be mechayev himself to pay kefil and dal vehei? But it's a separate din. Maybe it's a gift, you know, we need an incentive here. So the incentive for Ganav to come forward and confess his crime is that he's going to alleviate, he better be careful, because if we find witnesses, he's going to pay kefil, he may even pay dal v'chamisha in case of tamach v'machar. So let's motivate him to come forward with a confession, and we'll say to him, you know what, we'll make a deal with you. It's like plea bargaining. We'll exempt you from all knossos if you come forward with your own confession. But on the other hand, there's something called mamon, it's not knas, and that's the keren. For that, we have a principle of odas bal din, kemei eidim doin. There's no greater evidence than his own confession with regard to keren. But in kefel and dal vehei and all knossos, we have a new incentive. We're going to say to him, you know, if you come forward with your own confession, then you'll be potter. There's a gigantic machlokas elsewhere in Baba Kama about modu b'knas v'achakach bo eidim. What happens if he runs into Beznin to confess his crime that he was a thief, and then immediately afterwards two witnesses came in? And there's one day in the Gemara that says he knew that these witnesses were going to come in, so he really wanted to see if he could potter himself up beforehand. And that's not a poter. If he knew that there were eidim coming in, you know, what's the grace of Hashem that he gets for confessing a crime? We have evidence anyway. Others say no. The very fact that he got there before the eidim, that's enough to potter him up from knas. Now there's another girsa in our Gemara, which you'll see here. I have something called Hagos V'Tziyunim. I don't know if you have it, but it says HaOmer Ganavti Tavachti U'Macharti.
Ah, yeah, I have that.
And the Rashash rejects that girsa, and he substantiates our girsa. Why? He says because if you take a look at Baba Kama Daf Ayin Hey, the Gemara says that even if he was moda on the gneva and he didn't say a word about tvichu mechira, so we have now a partial confession. Now two eidim come in and say we saw him slaughter the animal or sell this animal. Again, we didn't know it was stolen, but now that we know it was stolen, we can tell you something else. Not that it was stolen, he shechted it, he sold it. Is the Mishnah says in Baba Kama, Potter mi dashlume arba chamisha. Why? Because once he's potter from kefel, because he confessed that he stole, then he's potter from dal vehei. Meaning that dal vehei is an extension of kefel. It's built on the shoulders of, it stands on the shoulders of kefel. And if he's potter from kefel, then ipso facto he's potter from dal vehei. Therefore, says the Rashash, the Girsa of HaOmer Ganavti V'Tavachti V'Macharti is an incorrect girsa, because all we need is his Oda on Gneva, and automatically he'll be potter from Tvicha Mechira, even if witnesses will come in and testify that he shechted the animal. The Mishnah goes on. Hamis Shori Esploni. My shark killed a person. And in such a case, the Torah says that you have to pay a kofar. Kofar is a special penalty. And we'll get back to that in just a second. Oh,
is that only for Shor Mulad?
Well, yeah, Shor Mulad. And oh, here's another case where Shoro Shel Ploni, my shor killed a shor. So the first case, my shor killed a human being, and the Torah says you have to pay kofar. In the second case, my shor killed another shor, and I have to pay Dmei Ashor, I have to pay the value of the shor. And there are no witnesses. So what happens now? Does he have to pay the kofar? He says the following. Hareza, the Mishnah says that Mishal Melpi Atzmo, that kofar is not called a knas. And of course, Nezek, in the case where his shor killed another shor, that's certainly Nezek, that's certainly not a knas, and therefore does Baldin Kimei Eidim Domi. So let's talk about kofar for a minute. Kofar is the following. The Torah says that if a shor, well, let's read the pasuk here. I don't know if you have it in your Gemara. The pasuk is in Shmos Perkov Alf. It says, "Im shor nagach mitmol shel shon, v'huad b'vaolav v'lo yishmerenu." So the Baal HaShor got warned time and time again, all told three times. The hamis isho isho, and the shor went out and killed a person. That means the owner of the shor was not careful, knowing full well, being forewarned, that he has a belligerent animal in his possession. Nevertheless, he didn't take the right precautions. And guess what? The most terrible catastrophe took place. And the shor went out and killed a man or a woman. Says the Torah, Shor Yisakel, V'gam ba'olav yumos. Now what is gam ba'olav yumos? It means he deserves to die, but the next part of the pasuk says, Kofer yushas olav. V'nosan pinyon nafsho kechol asher yushas olav. Our Mishnah understands that this concept of kofar yushas olav is mom. It's not some sort of a knas. It's mom. Mom would mean that we're going to evaluate what this person would have been worth, this victim Nebuch who's dead as a result of the negichas hashor, as an evid if we would sold him on the market, or a shivcha if it's a woman. And this is what we call Kufra Mamona. Now Kofar is called Mama. And therefore Mishalem al Piatzmo, therefore his Odas Baldin is enough. There's another Mandi Omar in the Gemara Bava Kamadaf Mem who holds that Kufra Kapara, that really this is not a compensation at all. This is an atonement. Well, when it comes to atonement, Then it has the same din as a knas. It's modu b'knas potter, modu b'kapara potter. Now, the most profound way of establishing this opinion that kofar is a kapara is that we evaluate not the victim who was killed, but the owner of the shor.
Whom does he pay?
He pays the yorshim. Now, in the case of a ger who doesn't have yorshim, if let's say he's not married, he has no children, blah blah blah, that's a sugya, and it might be that in such a case he doesn't have to pay because there's no tviya, there's no one to be tovet.
But the normal cases, he pays the yorshim.
But in 99.9 cases out of 100, he'll pay the yorshim. But how much money is he paying for the yorshim? So if he held kufra mamona, then he's paying the value of the victim who died. What would he have been worth on the market? And that would be a function of his age, of his health, of his strength, etc., etc. If, on the other hand, you hold kufra kaparo, then he's being mechaper in his own nefesh because gambal of yumos, he deserves to die. And this is the only case where the Torah allows to take a pigeon for someone who really deserves to be put to death.
Even though the Torah says, if As it were, leaving open the possibility that they can all say.
Well, no. So that's a difference. So you've got im. What does the word im mean in the Torah? Like, I don't want to get into that now, but we can study that if you want. But my point is that if it's a kofar, if the kofar is a kapara, then we evaluate not the niftar, right? Not the person who went to his eternal repose, but rather the owner of the shor. He's being pulled his own nefesh. He may get away with a lesser price, or he'll have to pay a more stiff price. But whatever it is, that's called kapara. Now, since the kapara im kofi yishus olav means dov shel bal hashor, that's called kufar kapara. That's called the knas. Why? And this is a fascinating idea. Knas doesn't necessarily mean above and beyond the amount of loss, of, you know, the financial loss, the hefzid. It could be any deviation from the price of the hefzid in either of the two directions. Whether it means he's paying more than the compensation, like in the case of kefil dalvei, or in the case of knas and onus mufata, we pay 50 above and beyond the pagam and the boshes, or even if it's less than the compensation, that too makes it into a knas, and therefore mode of a knas is potter. Our Mishnah supports the Madiomer who says kufra mamona, and therefore it's mishalim al piatz. Now, frankly, I don't understand why the Mishnah has to bother with the case of Shoro Shel Ploni. If it's Hamish Shori Es Ploni, then you have a machlokas about the very nature of Kofar. And according to one Man D'Omar, which is not reflected in our Mishnah, Kufra is Kapara, therefore he would not pay the Kofar in this case, because we have no independent evidence against him. But what's the Chiddush? So there's a great Chiddush in our Mishnah that we hold that Kufra Mamona. And therefore, but what's the finish of the Mishnah case of Shor Shel Ploni? And I can think of 1,000 cases where I admit that I owe you money. For example, I come into business and I say I borrowed $1,000. So obviously, that's mama. So if I say I broke your table, that's Odos Baldin. So Shor Shel Ploni, my Shor, it destroyed your Shor. I have to pay for that. I don't know what the finish is. So at one point I was thinking that maybe the case of Shor Shel Ploni is a case of a Shor Tam. And I'm admitting that I have to owe you half of the nezek. In a case of Hamish Shor Shel Ploni and it's a kofar, that's because it's a Shor Muad. But in the case of Shor Shel Ploni, maybe it's a Shor Tam. Yeah, but I don't want to say it's a short time, because according to the Man D'Omer, the Chatzi Nezek is a knas, then how would he pay al piatzma?
Well, then that may be why they wanted to bring it, because there is an opinion that with Chatzi Nezek
that
would
be... It's Momo, it's not knas.
Yes.
Right. So I think the Gemara is going to pick this up, but we'll get to it. Hamish Shoro Shori Es Avdo Shel Ploni. Now here the Torah has a set price. If your shor, let's say shor muad, kills an eved, you pay shloshim slayim. That's clearly a davar sheyesh bo kitzva. That's a knas. Zeinu mishalem al piatzma. Zeaklal. The Mishnah gives you an overall a rule. Kol mishalem yeser mashehizik. Any case like kefel or dal vehe, or in the case of onus of mafata, or in the case of eved shorig es shoru es avdo. You know, all these cases, there's a set penalty, and it's not a reflection of the compensation of the moment aspect. It's kefel, it's above, and so forth and so on. Eino mishalim al pi atzma. That's the principle of moda miknas pot. So the Gemara now asks the following question: the Reish of Mishnah says pitisi es bito shel ploni. What happened to Otis? Why did the Mishnah go out of its way to mention Pitui without any mention of onus? Listni anasti bito shel ploni and eina mishalim knas al piatzma. So the Gemara answers, Lo mi boy, Kamer. The Mishnah wants to tell you bigger chiddush. Lo mi boy, I don't have to tell you the case of Anasti. The lo ka pogim la. In other words, she did not agree to have Be'ilu with him.
Nehir pagam is like a moral pagam or a reputation pagam.
I'll read to you the Hebrew here. He says, Lo iskima li boilo. She did not agree to have beer with him. It was a rape situation. Ve'eino yotze olel las. And no one's going to be able to say any bad things about her. So she's not, there's no pagam on her reputation. Her reputation is not blemished. On the contrary, people feel very, very sympathetic. What's the word I'm looking for? They feel sympathy for her. You know what I mean? Because never she was a victim of this rape. But in the case of Mafata, of Mafuta, there's a loss involved here. Why did she agree to have this relationship? Therefore, in the case of Ones, it was always partial to Mishali Boshes Pagam Al Piatzma. Certainly, we're talking about a woman who did not suffer a loss of reputation in the case of Ones. And therefore, if she didn't suffer a loss of reputation, then Harei ein he nifgemes al yidei shtkabel b'menem saboshes b'gam sharei al brak al atzmo motzi la sha'onas lo aleh shenen sal yodo. I'm not exactly sure what the Gemara means. I'll just tell you the simple, straightforward translation, and then we'll try to analyze it depending upon how much time we have. When he pays boshes upagam in the case of anasti, right? Because that's the thrust of our mission in the case of pitu, that he pays boshes upagam based on his own confession, and she receives this money. Is there anything humiliating about receiving the money? Is there anything that might taint her reputation by receiving the money? And the answer is no. He himself is ruining his own reputation, right? I mean, obviously he has a bad reputation to start with, but the very fact that he pays the boshes pagam intensifies, his loss of reputation. It illustrates or proclaims the fact that he did this terrible action. So, in a sense, he's being motzi laz on himself, but not on her, because she's collecting this boshes pagam as an anusa against, because she had this mice against her will. Aval pitisi de kol pogim la. Now he's going to tell Bezdin that as a result of this pitu, that he's ruining, and she consented, so therefore she's ruining her reputation as well. Is Emelo Meshalim al pi atzma? If she were to accept this payment based on his confession, then she's putting her reputation on the line. Because we really don't know why she's receiving this payment, this compensation. Is it for an ones, or is it for a pitu? So maybe we want to say in the following, in this case, we should suspend this payment of boshes of pagam in order to protect her reputation. Will be motzi laz on her as a result of what? Of his hodah? We don't have either. So there's the paradox in this Gemara, it's a big finish, is that there's a negative element from the perspective of the victim, of the Nara, if you impose the knas. I'm sorry, if you impose the boshes of pagam, I mean to say. Right, boshes of pagam lechora is pure profit from her perspective. I don't mean profit in the sense that she, had a good investment with dividends, but it's money coming into her bank or to her father's bank and so forth. So that's a good thing. But the Gemara says, nay, it's a bad thing. Why is it a bad thing? Because kapogimla means it jeopardizes her good reputation. Why is she receiving this payment? And the answer is, she's receiving this payment because it was a pitui, because she agreed to have relationships with him, a relationship with him. Then that's how tzar shema. Now again, if there are edim, that's exactly what has to be. That she collects the knas because she had this pitui. And we can't do anything for our reputation. But if there's no Eidim, and all we have is his Hodah, then we might want to suggest that in the case of Pitu, where we don't really want to ruin our reputation, it's bad enough as it is, right? In case of Onus, her reputation is not at stake. So paying Pagam or Boshas is pure profit, so to speak. There's no negative side to it. There's no downside. But in the case of a Pitu, there's a real chashash of Hotzos Laz on this woman because she agreed and consented to have this Be'ila. So maybe we shouldn't pay the Boshas of Pagam, because by paying Boshas of Pagam, you're really proclaiming, you know, with a foghorn, you know, you're waving the flag, oh, she had this Maisa. And then people are going to start talking, well, was it a Maisa of Pitui, and she agreed to it, and that's going to spread the word about her, and she loses her reputation. This is all the Havami. Kamashmol, the Mishnah wants to say, nay, even in the case of Pititius Pito Shalploni, where giving the Boshas Pagam, in a sense, really jeopardizes her reputation, nevertheless, we're not going to worry about lies. We're not going to worry about her negative reputation, and based on his own confession, he will pay Boshas of Pagam. I'll take this opportunity to wish everyone a good Shabbos. And Mitzvah Hashem, we'll continue next week.